All right, it's about that time for another episode of the Burt Betterman Bettercast. Today's topic, a rather broad one, but a great one, education. And if you're going to talk about education, at least like the third best person you can talk to is probably a teacher. So today we have Scott Palmer from the Waukee High School.
Correct, that's correct.
Mr. Palmer to the students.
Yep. I go by Scott with one of my teams and Mr. Palmer. Okay. A person, yeah.
The teams being a basketball team?
No. So my new role now, I teach in Waukee's aspiring professional experience, and we're trying to get them out of the idea of a regular school where I'm the teacher and they're the kid, more of like I'm a project manager / scrum master / whatever you need. They're like my team. Yeah. Have you?
Well,
it's a long story. I'm sure we'll get into, but yeah. Trying to, some of what I do now is trying to change that paradigm away from traditional education.
So. Right. So, we've crossed paths in a lot of interesting ways in the last few years. So, we went to college together for everybody listening. And then after that, you actually went back to my hometown, Rock Rapids, Iowa, and taught at Central Lyon.
Good old Rocky.
You taught my siblings.
Yeah. Yeah. I had your
sister. Almost everything they know.
Yep. And that turned out well, I think. That would turn out really well.
She's brilliant now.
Yeah.
She was dumber than a box of bricks before you taught her, but she's brilliant now.
She's going to listen to this, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Nice.
Of course
nice.
She will.
Okay.
So, and then your education, when you're at BV, you're a math major, right?
Mm-hmm.
A math geek, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody knows you don't use math after school's over. So where did that get you?
Correct. So to go back to your other point too, yeah, we've run cross paths a couple different places. I remember driving downtown away from work one time and I saw you like going into one building. Hey! You remember
no.
me rolling down the window? Either that or I messaged you when I got home, one of the two.
I think now I do remember that,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Anyway, math is its own separate thing as far as teaching math. It gets to be somewhat difficult in a way because the standards are very, very high as far as like getting, especially at the high school level. I did at the middle school level for a little while, and that was a little more free-flowing, where I just wanted to get them kind of ready, and I just wanted to get them thinking about things. But high school, I think I take it a little bit more, I don't know if serious is the right word, but there's certain things that I have to do to kind of get them ready for the next step. You know, there's certain things in algebra that we have to do to get you ready for algebra 2. Certain thing in algebra 2, you got to get ready for pre-calc and so on. Hopefully with the end goal, my end goal whenever somebody walks in is that they can survive whatever is coming their way when they leave high school. So, for example, if you're going to University of Iowa, there's probably some sort of math credit you have to take when you get there. I want to give you enough skills and enough know-how and everything so that you can survive that. Even if you don't major in it and major in math or minor in math or anything like that, at least you can survive and without any problems and it's not a headache.
Right.
So that ends up being my goal. So I spend a lot of time trying to get to know, as in the math classroom anyway. We kind of talk about my other role, but in the math classroom, I try to get to know where they want to go and what they want to do. And that kind of adjusts how hard I push and how hard I am versus how much freedom and other things, you know, it kind of depends on what they want to do. And I don't know, I try to individualize it that way, we'll say.
Yeah, it definitely seems like you do give them a lot of freedom. So is that part of the reason Waukee's better than everybody?
I don't know if Waukee's better than everybody. I know.
I'm sorry, I mean, they're more progressive.
Progressive. I know Waukee does have a, you know, outside the state. I remember when I was in Rock Rapids and I was thinking about going to Waukee and I had accepted the job here. I remember Mr. Ackerman at the time was the superintendent and he went to the school board and told him I was leaving. And then they're like, oh no, why? You know, cause I was a young person and they like young people there and they'll probably try to keep him there. And they said, well, he's going to go to Waukee. And they're like, oh, okay.
Right.
Okay. So I think Waukee kind of has its own stigma and it has its own view, I suppose, from everybody else. But math-wise, so progressively, you know, they try to stay on top of things. We had a superintendent for a long time that really, really tried to stay on top of the most progressive ideas or, you know, not necessarily the newest because sometimes the newest isn't the best, but trying to get the best thing happen. And he always wanted to just kind of be on the cutting edge, which led into the program that I work in now, the APEX program.
Okay, so you were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
Can you dig deeper?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a super long story, but the short version is that APEX, for a long time, so our building is getting very, very full, our high school, and we weren't ready for a second high school. And so they needed a place to kind of, if the dam is about to burst, you got to find a place to relieve that pressure.
Sure.
And so they wanted to start a new program. So a bunch of people got together, a board of school members, community members, administrators, the school board themselves. They kind of traveled all around looking for different programs to start. Progressive, as I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. looking for a progressive program. And they landed on this thing in Kansas City called CAPS, Blue Valley CAPS.
Okay.
And they really liked it. And so we brought it back to Waukee and we started our own CAPS program. And then we rebranded here just 2 years ago to what's now called Apex. But basically, it's trying to get the idea of work-based learning going. Work-based learning, meaning my kids make websites for companies that actually are out there right now.
Like seriously?
There's a company, a gal who started a program called SheplaysNow.com. If you check out SheplaysNow.com, that was a website made by my group. It's about women athletics and getting them excited and trying to get them mentally through things, and it's a resource. There's actually a program in the state from the Technology Association of Iowa called HyperStream, and that's all these high schools from around and middle schools throughout the state. They do robotics competitions and cybersecurity, and they make apps and stuff, and we redid their website. We redid Worth Exterior's website. We redid Iowa Association of Student Council's website. We made an app for our weight room in the school that we're looking to now sell to other districts around here to keep track of when kids come in and lift and how often they're lifting, so coaches can go online and be like, okay, my football team's not lifting enough. I need to get them in because – at the time, our coach was doing it by hand. He was saying, hey, who's here? And then Mark came in checking him off. And so we said, we can virtualize that.
Absolutely.
We're currently working on a project where our counselors have a big giant binder of names. And it's giant, man, because Waukee's a big district. Yeah. And when they want to know if somebody has enough credits to graduate, they have to flip through and find the kid and, like, look up and cross out classes. And there's got to be a way to make that better. So I've got part of my team is designing an app around that. We call it a course tracker, but designed around figuring out if kids can graduate. So the goal being to get them out there and to actually get them projects that matter, but at the same time trying to giving them a professional experience while also giving them some career exploration so they know, okay, I don't want to be a developer or I don't want to be in web. I want to be a business analyst or I want to be a data analyst or I want to be a network administrator or I want to be. So part of it is doing all those projects and that's where I kind of step in. My job is to find projects and to bring them in. And then part of my job is to also connect them with people. I have one of my kids, he's very interested in event management. So like plays and musicals and how the lighting gets set up and the sound and everything else. And so through a contact in Apex, I found him and got him connected with the president of the Civic Center, the president and CEO of the Civic Center. Nice. So I went down there and got a personalized tour and got to see everything and how they operate. And now he wants to go into like business management side of that thing because he went and saw and found out, wow, this is actually really cool. And now he knows that's what he wants to do. Versus, you know, I had no idea what I wanted to do when I was in school. You know, I was like, math is easy. I'll do math. Why not? You know?
Math is easy.
Yeah.
Right?
Why
that's
not
what
math?
Every kid says. Math is easy.
Yeah, why not math? I was pretty good at it. So I just went into math not knowing what I would do with it. And I think that happens a lot. I think a lot of people don't really know. They have an idea like, yeah, I kind of like to draw, so I'm going to be a graphic designer. But you really know what that entails to either be a freelance graphic designer or to work for a company and graphic designer. To be UI, UX, most people don't even know that's a job. So there's just a lot of things that this new job entails, but it's really trying to get them ready before they even get to college and internships and get them ready for that next step. So that's the new role that I have away from the math. I'm the only instructor, so there's 8 of us instructors, and I'm the only one. I'm back at the school part of the day. I do math part of the day back at the school, and then I also live in this other world. So I've got my feet in both. The progressive new, Waukee's the first one in the state. And there'll be many more coming up, popping up soon. We've had about 60 schools come through to see what we do and to try to copy, or not necessarily copy, but to make their own and do what they need to do. So you'll start to see them pop up more and more. Ours just happened to be the first because to loop it all the way back around, it's
full circle.
Yeah, fairly progressive at Waukee.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So obviously when I refer to math geeks and Waukee being better than other people, it's a little tongue in cheek, a lot tongue in cheek, 100% tongue in cheek. But I think getting back to the math geek, like a lot of kids, I think to themselves when they're taking class, when am I going to use this again? Mm-hmm. How am I going to use this? How to apply it? And in conjunction with that, myself, I've noticed that like at this point in my career, looking back, like if there's one thing I could have done more of, what would it have been? And it would have been actual job experience, mm-hmm. more internships, mm-hmm. because studying a subject is very different than actually living in the real world. And if you don't know what that feels like, it's like you said, it's how does a kid know what subject to pick, to focus on, to study on without having any experience in any of them at all whatsoever?
Yeah. And part, so that's why I love my job now. Like I moved back to Waukee, to the United States for that job. I was out, I was living, I was having a great time in Europe, and I was like, you know, this seems super important to me, is getting them that experience. Because you're exactly right. I tell mine, I don't want them to necessarily know what they want to do when they leave, but I do want them to know, like, okay, never mind. I thought that's what I wanted, and I've had a ton of that. I've had a ton of, like, never mind, that job looks awful. I do not want to go do that. Think about how much better that is than not knowing, as you said. Then you walk out and you have no idea. Well, I think this, I'm going to be a physical therapist, having no idea what any of that entails. Mm-hmm. It just sounds good off your tongue.
Yeah.
But I had a talk with a lot of kids today, and I think my main job and what I really try to do in the math world and in the Apex world is I just try to get them something passionate, something they're passionate about, mm-hmm. and I try to let them run with that thing. Because you and I both know, like, you're not getting paid for this podcast. You just kind of wanted to do it, right?
Yeah.
And you want to get better at it, so you study it, and no one's forcing you to do it. It's not a thing. I have my passions and other things that I do outside of here. You know, I started my own DJ business because I like doing it, and I love being a part of that whole culture. Nobody asked me to do it. Nobody forced me to do it. And I'm going to continue getting better at it because I want to. And so I think there's a lot missed, I think, in traditional education. And I think legislators miss a lot of this. And I think a lot of administrators and other things miss it because they're so focused on the old school mentality. And you know this. The old school mentality was, we need all of our kids to know this block of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this circle of life, this is where you're going to live. You have to know. You have to know when the Civil War was. You have to know what the chemical equation for salt is. You have to know how to solve a quadratic equation. You have to know. And it's like, that's really not the case anymore. Because if I need to know when the Civil War started, I have something in my pocket that will tell me when the Civil War started. If I need to know what the chemical equation of salt is, I can look that up. If I need to solve a quadratic, there's an app that I can take a picture and it'll solve it and show the work and things.
Which is fair, but is it important to still help kids understand why it's important to know about the Civil War? Because they may never be curious enough to look it up on Google.
And you hit it on the head, because I think the old school way of teaching and looking at that was like, that was the focus. The focus was getting them, like, I think of Jeopardy. The focus was to get them good at Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Right?
Fair enough.
That was exactly why I went to school. Yeah. It's like, okay, gotta get, what's the definition of this word? How do you say this in Spanish? Yeah. What's this quadratic equation? And that's just not the case anymore. It's exactly what you just said, where I think a big bulk of education now needs to be the idea of letting them find a passion and run with it. But you still have this core, but your core isn't regurgitation, and it's not getting them ready for Jeopardy. It's like, why is this important? Why do I need to know the chemical components of salt? Well, because that influences what it's made out of, which tells me what I should put in my body, which tells me this thing, which helps my overall health. Why should I learn how to solve a quadratic equation? Well, gravity works on quadratic types of equations. So am I going to have to find the ballistic missile trajectory? No. But at least I now have a better sense of, okay, this is going to kind of go like this because of this quadratic thing, and I have an understanding of where that fits. And you could make the same argument for the Civil War, you know, so history doesn't repeat itself, is the quote. So there's a lot of things that I think, and Waukee does a really good job of making that a priority, making the why a priority, making the how does this work, not necessarily the old school, we call it the factory line, you know, like stamp a student. Okay, you're good. You've learned all this, stamp a student. You've learned all this, stamp a student. You're good.
And the why is where everything becomes interesting. So I think a lot of kids don't attach to something because it's just minutiae until they know why. And then when they know why, they go, oh my God, that's interesting, right?
Yep. And I still think getting someone to find a passion, like, no one in the history of mankind has ever done anything memorable because they had to.
Right.
You know, like, poets don't make this amazing poetry because someone sat there in English and they're like, hey, don't forget, in a haiku, there's actually 3-4, right? 3-4-2-7. No one did that. They're like, hey, this is kind of fun. I want to do more of this. No artist ever sat in a classroom. So I think helping kids find something that they really want to latch onto, I think, should be a super huge priority. And starting that early, even if it's just, you know, every middle school boy you ask is going to talk about video games. That's what they're all going to ask, right? That's what they're all going to want to do, is they're all going to want to play video games. Is it difficult to then show them what Unity is and show them what Java is and show them a computer language where they can actually, like, and even if they're not ready to program in a very complex language, they can at least get the idea of how languages work and computers work and how, you know, there's a route you could take where you wouldn't have to force them to do those things, man. You wouldn't have to be like, you need to open your books to page 27, please. Right. You know, there's a test that this. They would absolutely just run with it, and they'll make you a game, and you'll be like, wow, that was really cool. That's awesome. I don't know. It's tough, man. Education is tough. It's tough. Absolutely. It really is tough. It's not getting any easier. And so what is this, 11? I think this is my 11th year. My 11th year, it's not getting any easier. And even this Apex job, everybody that I tell about Apex and that I bring into the program, they all eventually say the same thing, where we even have a bet amongst the instructors of when the person will say, I wish they had this when I was in school. We have a bet, usually. We're like, I bet he says it within 20 minutes. I bet he says it within... And eventually everybody says the same thing. I wish they would have had that. But even that gets hard because the passions and things kind of get beat out of kids, I think, as they go through. You know, like you get in middle school and you're just super excited about life and you want to be a pro basketball player and you want to be a pro football player. And eventually that kind of goes away because you get kind of in the system and you get stuck in there because you get stuck of, okay, did you do your homework? Did you do your test? Why is this a B? Why is it... And none of the focus is anymore on those passions. None of the focus is on how to get them ready for it. It's just all about, did you get an A? Did you get an A? Yeah. Did you get an A? Did you do this test? Did you get this paper done? Yeah. It misses out on a lot. So then when I get them in high school, I think half of my job is kind of waking them back up. I use the term wake up all the time. I broke a marker today. Did I say that? I just threw it down. I just screamed and threw a marker down. It just shattered everywhere. And like part of it went way over there because I was just so upset trying to get them like to wake up and to get going and to find that passion. It's hard to do. It's hard to do, especially in 16, 17, 18 year olds. It's hard.
And we hit on something earlier too that I don't think people always realize the value of learning what you don't want to do. Mm. And I had this perfect example of another kid, and you might remember, you probably do remember him. I won't mention his name, but he went to BV with us. He became a bank examiner. And he was a bank examiner for like a year and a half and hated his life. So it was odd. First of all, I went to college with him. Then I became a bank examiner and worked with him again. So I had the opportunity to talk with him. So just hated what he was doing and went back to school to pharmacy school. So now he took 4 years of education, worked for a year and a half, and then started over already with another 4 more years, I assume. And maybe longer.
And when I hear stories like that, and when I try to relate that to my kids, all I see is dollar signs there. I see like immovable, unavoidable debt when that happens. Yeah. And if nothing else, money motivates kids. I'm not gonna lie, money really gets kids going. So when I have a chance to be like, listen, man, go see this person and ask them about their job, because I know you think you want to be a developer, but you need to go see what a developer actually does. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and they're like, okay, never mind. Well, how much did we just save them? Well, we saved them a 4-year college degree, just like your buddy. We saved them a 4-year college degree, and we saved them all this other stuff, time, effort, money, headache, stress, because they were able to see that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I know we were eventually going to kind of talk about where education is going, but I think that's a big place for it to go. I think finding passions of kids and like letting them just run with that, and they'll pick up some of these other skills that – Some of that circle I talked about. Mm-hmm. And so they'll pick some of that up. But think about your buddy and how much that would have benefited that person to have a program where you could have seen what a bank executive does or what a bank loan officer does. Because you're like, hey, I want to work in a bank. Have you seen what a bank does? Mm-hmm. And then they go, they're like, okay, never mind. Yeah. I really, I don't know. I wish that would have happened back then. And I don't know why that can't happen. I don't know why that can't happen more, because I know you're out there in the professional world. And I've never met a person that said no when I was like, hey, do you mind taking this kid for like an hour and just showing them what you do?
Oh, hell
and,
yeah.
Right? And I guarantee everybody in your office would be like, oh, yeah, we'll take a kid for an hour, because we're not asking for internships. That's not, we're just trying to get them. We're trying to get them breath. We're not trying to get them depth yet. Depth comes from when you finally figure out where you want to go.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. It makes sense. It just makes logical sense. I have no idea why that can't happen more. I have no idea why you and I had to flounder around and go to college and major in something that we had no idea what it would look like, and spend, I mean, do we want to talk about how much we had to spend?
No, spend we don't. At BB? We don't right now.
Thanks a lot, BB. Do they still call you for money too?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
For sure.
I don't answer.
For sure.
I don't answer.
Oh my God, where was I going with that? So, I'm trying to reconcile the thought that I'm having right now with what you just said, because what we're talking about there, the fact that you get some real work-based experience, internships almost, if you will, is invaluable. At the same time, I can remember going to BV, and that was the last thing I wanted to do. I don't know why. I don't know if I just loved being a student so much, or if I was such an introvert that I didn't want to, like, be in an office yet. I don't know what it was, but I didn't want to go interview for an internship. I didn't want to do an internship. I did it because I had to. So I suspect not everybody's like me, but there's got to be some people that were. So is it may not just be the way school's set up. There may be a natural inertia for kids wanting to. Do you feel like you're growing up too fast, or what is it?
Oh yeah, to go at that point, there's a lot of people who aren't ready. I mean, I get a lot of my kids, the 16, 17, 18 year old are not ready to go be a CEO of the Civic Center.
Sure,
they're just not ready for that.
Yeah.
So, but what I can do then in my job now is to coach them into it, or to, again, I think I still go back to it. If I could find something they're really interested in, they would go do it. Like when you were sitting there like, I don't want to go talk to this financial institute. I don't want to go talk to this bank. That's because maybe that wasn't your passion. If I would have let you been like, what do you want to do? Like anything in life, no holds barred, take money out of the equation, what would you do? And I would have to bring you one of those people. I bet you'd have been like, oh yeah, I'll go. Right? Do you think you would have?
I think that's very possible.
Right, yeah. I'm not saying that would have fixed all the scenarios, but to circle back to that idea of passion and stuff, I think if you can get them excited about it and you can get them, then they will go seek it out. Now, there's some that I have that aren't ready. So I should mention that there are some that I would not have sent to this person. Mm-hmm. There are some that I would not have sent to this thing over here because they're not ready. Some are not ready for some of these projects that we have. But the ones that are, man, this one kid I had last time, he built this website. He got an internship over the summer, and he beat out like people that had just graduated from college and looking for an internship. Mm-hmm. He beat out all them because in his spare time, he started a drone business. He built another website. He found a nonprofit organization that's looking for an e-commerce site that he's building. And so he found something and he latched onto it. And I did none of that. I did nothing. Yeah. I just had to like put the opportunities in front of him. Yeah. He found something passionate. I did have another super introvert, like almost to the point physically where he's down here like this, right? Little guy. I had him, he built the Hyperstream website, and they liked his work so much that they went ahead and gave his name to this company that they know of up in Ankeny. That's a fresh IT company starting out that doesn't have one. And he's now their webmaster. He's not an intern. He's a full-fledged employee. Like he leaves our school and goes up there and he is their webmaster. And he works remotely and he's their webmaster because it's something that he would have never had the opportunity until it's like given to him, you know? Mm-hmm. And is every story like that? No. But if you can grab somebody that has passion and that wants to do those things, you'd be surprised where they can run and take it to.
And you don't necessarily have to go outside of the school. I mean, I love that idea of getting more actual work-based experience, shadowing, whatever you want to call it. But like you said, with this kid, I think everybody just loves to feel that whatever they're working on goes somewhere. Like all these tests that you take, you're making yourself smarter. I get that. But if you build something in a class that is then used by your classmates, that's a totally different ballgame.
Oh, yeah. And there's a big push in education. So I'm not saying that Apex is the answer, and not every school is ready for something like Apex, because it's not. There is no one right answer. If there was a right answer, everybody would be doing it.
Right.
Right.
So, or you'd be rich.
Shocking. We've talked about taking the show on the road and helping people. But I you're exactly right. There's a big push in education now for that type of thing. And like project-based learning, where what you make actually has relevance in that either somebody else uses it or it's for a certain purpose or you return back to it because you're using it for this big thing over here, because there is inherently a big, big internal motivation that goes along with that idea. So I think you're totally right in that regard. In the math world, it's kind of hard to do because my goal is when they come in, I want them to be successful adults, and a lot of them plan on going to school somewhere. And so my goal ends up being a lot of like, let's just get you through school. And so whenever I get to like, when will we ever use this? Why do I have to do this? When I get to why do we have to do this, I'm like, you don't have to, man. I'm not going to force you. It's your world. You don't have to. I'm telling you. And so then I try to show them, if you don't, this is what's going to happen in a few years, just so you know. Mm-hmm. But it's really, I mean, I can't force you. Lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink. What do you want me to do? But the when are we going to use this? I use a lot of time. I'm like, man, you need to contact, until this changes, you need to either contact your local senator, because they're telling us we have to do this, or you need to go talk to the Iowa Board of Regents that decide curriculum in all of these schools, and you need to go maybe talk to the president because he decided math was important for everybody to do. So I usually answer in that way, and it's hard. It's hard mm-hmm. for a 16, 17 year old to wrap their head around that idea. But I really try to, like I said, that first day build or those that first long period build relationships. So I kind of have an idea of where they're going, so I know more about how to tailor the why. The why. I think the why is a good. I think that's good.
Well, and I think even. So again, this whole idea of finding their passion. So not that that's the only thing that they have to learn. They still have to learn mm-hmm. this core curriculum you're talking about. But I would almost venture to say, and based on my own experience, the way I was, if I at least have one passionate thing that I get a lot of fulfillment out of, then doing the other stuff isn't so bad anymore. You know, and I'm willing to jump through the hoops.
Yeah, and I bet, so to use your podcast for example, if back in the day or right now, if I were to tell you, hey, we're going to take, do I call you Bert? Is that what I call you?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know if I call him Bert, Betterman, I don't know what to call you.
You can use the alter ego or the first ego, whatever you feel like.
Okay. So if I were to tell you, like, I'll give you half your day where I need you to go and do this other stuff, and then I'll give you another half of the day where I can get you in touch with people who do professional podcasts. That kid that wanted to start his drone business, we got him hooked up with somebody from California who just started his own drone business, mm-hmm. and he's got a big one out there. If I told you, like, half your day was spent over here, and the other half you can make podcasts, you could do, I mean, that's going to make your day better, because I guarantee that second half of the day, I don't have to, quote-unquote, manage you.
Right.
I don't get any of that paradigm that's normally associated with school with, like, discipline and sit down and quit playing, because you're going to be off like nerding out on your computer, right? And you're going to be asking people questions and interviewing. You're going to be playing with microphones. So, I mean, I think there is something to what you said. There is a need. So I'm not trying to walk away here saying exactly what you just said, which is I still think this is important, but I still think drilling down to overall passions and thing, I think it's just missing. It's just missing. It's something that isn't there and it gets squelched because – ooh, what's the other best way to describe this? Look, if you take a kindergartner, you know, kindergartner, first grade, second grade, you know how pumped they are to go to school? And, like, they're just jacked. They get to learn how to read. I
very much remember my first day of kindergarten.
Oh, right?
It was that way.
My mom told me that I came home from the first day of preschool just bawling my eyes out because they didn't teach me how to read that first day. I, like, went in. Yeah, she tells the story all the time that I came home just bawling, like, they didn't teach me to read. And I was so excited, right? But now think about a high school senior. If you go walk around the high school right now, it's hoods up, earphones in, just kind of moping around and getting to the next thing. And then they sit in my class. And there's a reason why I have to break markers. And there's a reason why I have to scream, wake up. And not wake up and like you're sleeping, but wake up like, wake up, man. I'm asking you a question. I'm trying to get you involved in this thing. Wake up. There's a reason why that happens. And I think somewhere between K and there, it gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even a better example is think of college internships and college interns in general.
Sure.
So if you apply when you're done with college and you're told that you have to have some work experience, you have to do an internship, college students will then apply for these internships like this. I guess I got to apply for this internship and I'm going to go sit in this bank for 8 hours a day and I'm going to play it right. I got that vibe. I didn't do much interning. I was in the mm-hmm. education world, but I get that vibe from a lot of interns. I get a lot of college interns who are like, I have to do this.
Yep.
That kid that I sent and got an interview and got going with this internship, you know how pumped he is to have an internship? A 40-hour week. He's like, I get to work 40 hours a week. They're paying me like $15 an hour. He's so excited for that type of thing. So there's another example. K through 12, something gets lost. 12, the graduation from a senior, graduation in college, something gets lost. And I just, I don't know, man. I think eventually it just gets beat out of you and beat out of you and beat out of you through the system. And I don't know where the disconnect is. I don't know the answer. I don't know the solution. I suppose the first thing would be having to try to identify more of the problem. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I was going to say.
Do you see that?
I do. So when you talk about what's being lost, I was going to ask you the question of what else do you think is being lost? And from my perspective, it's somewhat similar to what we're talking about, real life experience, but not entirely. You know, I love academics and I'm very much an intellectual, but we miss a lot of just how do you live life skills in school too. Like, nobody ever has adequate enough financial training. Nobody knows how to balance a checkbook, what's the difference between debt and assets?
So on that note, I got to give a shout out. I promised John McDonald that every group that I had, I would talk to them about not, I would talk to them about investments and finance and credit and other things. So I think you nailed it on the head there. And the best meme that I've seen is the one, or the tweet that says, like, I'm so glad I learned about parallelograms in math class. Did you see this?
No.
It's like, I'm so glad I learned everything I could about parallelograms because parallelogram season is here and I need, and they're making fun of tax season. Like, yeah. Tax season's here, we don't learn how to do taxes, but man, we learn a lot about parallelograms.
Yeah.
So I think there is something to that. I try to do a little bit of it myself. I think this APEX program is a start in that right direction anyway, because so 4/5 of what I teach and what APEX program is has nothing to do with my, so I have a sector, and my sector is coding, programming, web, app. There's a health one, there's a global foods, there's exercise science, there's design, there's all these. But 4 out of 5 of what we do has nothing to do with what you're in. The first one is just about customer service and client relationship. Do I trust you? Do you trust me? Does the client like you? Have you been communicating? Have you been giving iterations? Number 2 is academic prep beyond GPA. So it's, have you used feedback? Have you taken what they've said and got out of your own brain? And instead of just filling out a test yourself, have you gotten other people involved? So there's a lot of what we do in APEX that are around that. Now, could we go a step further and help people learn how to do taxes and how to manage money and set up a budget? And so I absolutely 100% agree with that. Because parallelogram season is not a thing. And right. tax season is.
Right.
Tax season is a real thing.
Right.
I still don't know how to do my taxes. I have my friend, though. She's a CPA. I watch her kids for a night. I babysit her kids for a night. And she does my taxes a different night. It's a great, great relationship I have.
Nice.
But, yeah, I think there's totally something to that. So I try as much as I can to at least get them aware of those things. Because until John McDonald... he had like that stock market class.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
it was during, it happened to be during my planning period.
Uh-huh.
And so I just went in and I was like, yep, I'm ready. Like, tell me, I don't know any of this stuff. We went all the way through BV and I never had a class on personal finance. I never had a class on credit cards and investments and Roths and stocks and bonds. And I never had any of that. And so I learned a lot there. And then obviously I've taken that now and kind of done a lot more with it. But I think you're totally right. That's another huge missing part.
So here's a true story about me and my motivation for what I studied. I did have John McDonald's stock market class, and that did get me interested in the stock market, and that was a bit of what got me going where I got going. However, the biggest motivation to me majoring in finance and eventually also economics was the fact that I knew money was a huge part of life, and I didn't understand it, and I was terrified of it, so I majored in it and got a job based on it. Now, since that time, I found a good company to work for, a culture that I loved, and a niche within that area that, you know, did intellectually suit me and that has motivated me. But that can also go horribly wrong. I mean, it was a very defensive, conservative choice on my part to pick my education and my career path based on something I was afraid I didn't know enough of, as opposed to
something you're passionate about. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
And I wonder how often that happens. I mean,
I don't know
how many people have that story. Like, you know, this kind of sounded good. Like your buddy, you know, I majored in finance. That kind of sounded good, but I really want to do this pharmacy thing. So I almost wonder how much that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think there is a place for that. I don't know what it looks like. Again, education is getting more and more governmenticized. Not a word, but I'm going to make it one.
Sure.
It's getting more and more, you know, controlled. This is what you're going to teach.
Mm-hmm.
It's even starting to get to this is how you're going to do it. This is what you're going to do it. This is the time frame you're going to do it in. There's starting to be more and more controls on that stuff. And the more and more the government, and here would be the difficult part. And the difficult part would be it's so full right now of stuff that we have to do in the math. For example, the math Iowa core is just a mess. It's like, it's insane. I remember it was like 200 times the number of objectives that like these other countries have in math. We have to do all this crazy stuff. And so in order to put in finance and some of these other things that would help you in life, you're going to have to take stuff out. And I'm assuming a lot of the legislators don't want to be on the front page of the Des Moines Register saying, Scott Palmer wants to take out part of the math core, and everybody's going to be like, I'm not voting for that guy. He hates education. You know, like that immediately turns the spin on he hates education. He doesn't want kids to know math. He does. That'd be hard. So I don't know where it fits, and I don't know the right steps to take to get it to go that way. But I could see that being a hurdle because it's all being so put into this box of this is what an education in Iowa looks like. This is what an education in Iowa looks like.
Which and that's one of the things that it feels like there's going to be a divergence here, because education has gotten very much that way. At the same time, with what we're capable of doing on the internet, things like Khan Academy or any other YouTube video learning based thing that you can find out there, I think there's a lot of people thinking, A, I don't have to spend money to get my education, but B, it's just more interesting and I'm learning more from it. But then the complicated part is, like, we're still very much reliant on, you need a degree, you need a piece of paper as sort of the hoop you jump through to get in the door.
And I think you know this. Tech is a really cool place where that ideology is starting to change a little bit.
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
Like, you don't need a four-year degree to go work. Like, this kid's a webmaster and he has no degree whatsoever. You wonder why? Because he's got the skills.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of certificates and other things. So tech is a cool way that we're starting to kind of turn that ship a different direction. It's obviously going to be really difficult to do with something like medical. Medical, you're going to have to know what this artery is. You know, there. So again, there's not one right answer, but I think there's positive shifting going on that way. For example, two examples I want to give is, one of them nowadays, when you apply to some of these schools, they no longer act like some of these bigger schools and college applications, they no longer ask you about, like, what classes you take, what was your GPA. They do things like, what's something you've been involved in your community? What's something you're passionate about and that you've done and that just blows your mind? And what, you know, they're asking things like that because so the second thing is in Apex, so how it got started is we took a board of 21-ish people from around the metro that work at John Deere, Intelligen, and Spindustry, and Wells Fargo, and University of Iowa, and we took a bunch of big wigs, and we said, what do you want people to know? Like, what do these kids need to know when they get out of here? And not one of them came and said, they need to know Java. They need to know calculus. Nobody said that, man. They're like, they need to be able to think. They need to be able to show up on time.
Exactly.
They need to be able to shake somebody's hand. They need to be able to look you in the eye when you're talking to you. They need to be able to, nothing has anything to do with coding and things. So they're starting to recognize that in the business side of things. But if you think about how school was when you and I were in school, there was a lot of silos. And I use the term silo because business was a silo over here, and college was a silo over here, and high school was a silo over here. Where high school, we were told, well, in college, this is what it's going to look like, right?
Yeah.
And then we got to college, we're like, no, it's not. And college, like, well, in college, this is what the real world looks like. Uh-huh. And there's no talking amongst any of these groups, you know? It was just this guy over here, this guy over here, and this thing over here, and they never talked to each other. So I think there's shifting in that direction by programs like this Apex, because our advisory board and our curriculum, I didn't make the curriculum. The Iowa Core didn't make the curriculum. My curriculum was made by the VP of this and the CEO of this and the HR director of this and the lead developer for this company and the because we have a big advisory board and then we split into curriculum teams, and those curriculum teams dictated what we should be doing. So I think there's not been enough talking amongst all of those things. And I think, to go to your point about, you know, you don't need a four-year degree, you don't need some of those things, I think that's starting. It's the slow changes. It'll never maybe be the same, but I think tech's a good place for it. And I think programs like Apex are starting to turn that in a different direction.
And do you think it's the right direction to go in?
I think so. I mean, I still think, I walk into a lot of business meetings with business clients, and I say the words, some of these kids are ready to contribute right now. Yeah. Like, they're ready to make something cool for you and to blow your brains away with what they're able to do. And even if, God, we had one kid a few years ago, he just sat on a team of QA people at the company. He just sat on the team and was in the meetings. And finally, one day, somebody asked, they're like, hey, so-and-so, what do you think? And he's like, why don't you just do this and this? And they're like, oh, yeah, why don't we just, you know, like, bringing in an outside perspective and bringing in somebody who hasn't been beaten down by the system and who hasn't, I mean, I think we eventually get blinders and blinders and blinders and blinders, and now we only know this one way to do things. And having somebody creative come in just to see what you do and offer suggestions. I mean, I don't know. Some of these people are ready to contribute at 16, 17. Some aren't. Don't get me wrong. Some are really not. Like, I needed college to kind of get my mind in the right place. I wasn't very mature.
Sure,
yeah. But some of them are mature enough that they're able to, like, shake. And that's what my program does. My program gets them ready for that idea or for that scenario. But I think some of them are ready. You know, some 16, 17, 18-year-olds are brilliant, and they're ready to contribute right now. Do they have to go get a four-year degree? No. Do most people still require it? Yeah, for whatever reason. My buddy talks about the principal, I can't remember, it was a principal, it was some company downtown, was going to hire a new SQL. SQL is a database language.
Sure.
In development. Yeah. And they were going to hire a new guy, and they basically got the guy who wrote the book on SQL. Like, he's the one who sat down and basically made the language. And then they went to hire him, and they got all the way through the process and found out that he didn't have a four-year degree. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, never mind. We'll go find somebody else.
Oh, really?
So some companies are still very stuck on the, right? Some companies are very stuck on the idea that you have to have a degree to do whatever it is I'm about to have you do. Some are starting to learn that you don't. Some colleges are starting to learn that you don't, because they don't ask for GPA and class rank anymore. Mm-hmm. They ask for those a little bit, but they ask more of like, what are you passionate about? Yeah. Where have you been involved in your community? Tell me about a time you went above and beyond just a regular day. What are you, you know, questions like that. Yeah. So I think it's headed in that way. I think HR people are looking at that. Like I said, our advisory board never once said, we need more Java developers. Nobody said that. They said, we need thinkers. We need problem solvers. We need communicators. We need somebody who's productive. Yeah. Who can be our, those are the things they're looking for. So I don't know. I think, again, to use the ship terminology, I think it's starting to turn, and I think, a positive direction. Because the jobs that were available when you and I were in school are not the same jobs that will be available, are not the same jobs that are available today. There's crazy stats behind it. You know, like 60% of the jobs that are out there right now weren't available 10 years ago. Yeah. They weren't a thing. They weren't even a thing. And so it used to be, way back when education started, it was the assembly line. Like, you're going to go Ford assembly line. You're going to go work on a factory line. You're going to work on a factory line. So it was easy. Get them in a room, teach them some stuff, get them out of here. And now those jobs just aren't like that anymore. Mm-hmm. They aren't. Those jobs are now done by robots, programmed by people who didn't do that type of thing. So the workforce is going in a different direction, and I think education is starting to shift that way. It's just a really hard boat to turn. A really hard boat to turn.
And I think, because the weird thing is, like, in the end, I think everybody would agree that what really matters is what a person knows and what they're capable of doing, not whether or not they had a piece of paper. But somehow along the way, we got a formalized process that said the piece of paper is the proxy for that. And if you, and a lot of times interviews, I mean, some companies are more in depth, but a lot of times interviews are an hour or two talking with somebody about questions over their resume, essentially. Well, and if that's all you get, then yeah, you kind of have to rely on this piece of paper that said you took 4 years here or there. Do we need to change the process? And like you were saying, with the way things are siloed, if we get colleges to be more integrated with the business world, then they can see what they know or don't know, or even with high school kids, depending on the field, as opposed to this, you know, meet you for an hour interview thing and then make sure you got your piece of paper.
Yeah. And I think if you think back to your first few years, because you were at Wells right now, or where are you?
Who do
you
Principal know? Now.
Principal, okay. Mm-hmm. Think back when you first started. Is what you learned at BV exactly what you did there, or did they have to train you in what they do there?
Lots of training, obviously.
Right? Mm-hmm. So why in the world did you spend so many thousands of dollars to get this thing when all you're going to do is get trained a different way when you're out of there anyway? Mm-hmm. And that's the question that we ask to a lot of our businesses. It's like, well, then why are we having them go to college, man? And so I spent a lot of my time, and that kid that ended up getting that internship, that college-level internship, on his resume, he didn't have, like, went to Iowa State. But you know what he had? I built this website. Mm-hmm. And I have this client. And mm-hmm. I worked for, I called it an apprenticeship. He had an apprenticeship mm-hmm. at this big data warehouse company over here in West Des Moines that deals with medical records. Like, that's the stuff, I think, that will eventually give substance. Mm-hmm. Like, for you, to use this again. If I were you, I would absolutely put on my resume something about, I started a blog and I started a podcast about just bettering myself. Mm-hmm. Because as an HR person, if I'm hiring, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for an Iowa State degree in economics. I'm looking for somebody that's super, oh my gosh, you do. Tell me about this podcast thing. He does other things outside of just this box. Mm-hmm. So I think some of HR is starting to go in that way. It's obviously not everybody, but I think it's starting to go that way. Mm-hmm. I think they're starting to not just look at a piece of paper and say, this defines you.
Yeah.
Or look at a college degree and say, this defines you. I think they're starting to shift away towards, like, what have you done, though? Like, what have you done with that? What mm-hmm. are you passionate about? What do you enjoy doing? How did you contribute to your society or community outside of just, I'm a banker or I'm a programmer?
Yeah.
Are you in user groups? Are you, you know, what have you coded? And I know in the development world, most all coders, they have a GitHub account, and they'll just put the link to their GitHub account on their resume, and that becomes a resume. Like, that's the only thing that they need to put on there, because then employers go and say, oh, what have you been contributing to? Who have you been talking to? Have you helped anybody with code? Have you contributed to anything? Yeah. Anyway, so I think, again, I think it's starting to go that way, or from what I've seen, because I kind of dabble my foot in all three. I kind of dabble. I'm in the high school world. We have DMAT credit, so I get to talk to a lot of those people, and then I'm also now in the professional world, so I kind of have my foot in all three, so I'm starting to see some shifts. Anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, and from an economic perspective, like, obviously, when something becomes required the way that college has, like, that became the plan. Well, if you have such an inelastic demand for something, the price can go through the roof, which it has, and it gets to the point where so many people are in so much debt to go to college because they think they have to. And then, aside from that, you get these for-profit universities that now are, you know, they're cheaper than the regular universities, but there's a lot of discussion as to whether or not they're really providing an education, I mean, or if they're just trying to get your money.
Yeah, so that almost leads into a whole entire discussion about where the future of Iowa education is going, because that's where it's going.
Let's open it
up. I mean, they took out collective bargaining, and that's the first step in letting for-profit high schools run rampant through the state. That's the goal. The goal is to privatize and make school for profit. Because according to the current people that are in power, it's to drive up competition. That's what they claim. They claim it's to drive up competition. And I'm sure that's
there's economic principles behind that business world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, bingo. But, you know, is that what's best for kids? Right. Is that what's best for the future of Iowa? I would argue that absolutely not. I was at a school that was for profit. When I moved away, it was a private institution. It was for profit. They were trying to make as much money as they could, and it was the worst organized district that I've been a part of, because it was all just about making money. Like, they had this really big good face of, let's make it look really great, so you send your kids there, and then there was no backup. There was no discipline. There was no help from administration. There was no formal, like, curriculum help, and nothing was about the kids. It was about getting parents to send their kids, to send their money, and then the rest was you figure it out over there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Would that happen here? I don't know. I know the first steps have been taken towards that. I don't know how much you know about the collective bargaining that they just got rid of, but essentially, the collective bargaining was eliminated because now it makes it not as appealing, and it makes it even more difficult to join a union. Because then, if it's difficult to join the teachers' union, then now there goes one voice screaming against the opposition. So now they've eliminated one of those voices. And now there's nobody else in their way to stop or prevent for-profit schools from starting here. Because, I mean, and we can go down this path as much as you want, but the path leads to, and this is worst case scenario, big schools like Waukee, big schools around here, would probably be okay because I still think parents would send their kids to Waukee. But small rural schools like the one I went to, very small town of like 900 people, 1,000 people, even smaller towns like 200, 300, 400 people, all those northwest Iowa towns, you know, all those northwest Iowa towns that have been having to consolidate, their money now wouldn't go to the school. It would go to the individual kids. And then if their parents didn't like the school, so imagine you have a class of 30 kids, okay? Eighth grade is 30 kids. 10 of them decide, I'm going to go to this bigger school over here. I'm going to ship them out to the bigger. Well, now there's only 20. And guess what? If that happens to every class, now they don't have enough money for the entire school. So then the school dies, and then the town dies, and then there's nothing there. And that's where it's going, man. Those small kids in that can't afford to ship their kids to these bigger cities will eventually have two choices. You'll either be homeschooled by whoever you hope knows something, or you'd learn online, like a Khan Academy or a YouTube thing, or you would pay to learn online somewhere. Big schools like Waukee, we'd be fine. Small schools, I'm telling you, the road that we're going down, that is what will eventually happen if it keeps going down that road and the for-profit stuff comes flying.
Yeah, and I'm an economics guy. I like free market principles, but there are some areas of life that I don't think it works. I think we have government for a reason because of that. And my opinion only, I don't think that's right for education.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's not even, I mean, I have some skin in the game, but I know that my skills and stuff are marketable elsewhere. Like, I don't have to. I'm not married to Iowa. Because this is only happening in Iowa. Well, actually, did you read that New York Times article? Did you see that? This is actually a microcosm. It was a really nice. I like the New York Times when they have stuff on there, but it was nice.
The failing New York Times.
Yeah, yeah. The failing. Oh, somebody made that. Yeah. But it went. They're talking about how this fight that's happening in Iowa right now is a very small microcosm about what's to happen to the whole nation. So like they're using Iowa right now to see. How this works and what people are going to fight them on, and what they're using Iowa as like a mini experiment, man, to see if this can work for the entire country, and that goes back to Betsy DeVos, Trump, and you know, championing the idea of for-profit schools. That goes to all these people. I'm telling you, man, it's just about money. It's about privatizing and getting them more money. Here's how you know it's exactly for money. Okay, and this is when there was a piece of legislation that was attached to this recent one, and it didn't make it through. The voucher didn't make it through, and neither did this other piece that was with it. But it probably will next year, probably. But anyway, there was a piece of legislation attached to it that if you didn't use, let's say that the legislation said everybody gets $5,000 to send their kid to whatever school they want. Okay, you get $5,000, so you get $5,000 in your pocket. There was a piece of legislation attached to this that you could take if you didn't spend your $5,000. Then you could bank it, and you could bank it all the way K through 12, however long you want, and then you can use it for a post-secondary school. Which means people that can afford to send their kids to school, people that can afford the $5,000, will bank it, and now they'll have a huge pot over here to not only get this taken care of because they don't need the help, but then they'll have their post-secondary paid for, and then they won't owe any debt or anything over there either. Meaning the rich would just keep getting richer by not having any debt over here. And the poor who had to use that $5,000 because they can't afford this stuff, they had to use the $5,000 plus a couple extra thousand. They have no savings over here to send their kid to college. And I don't know.
So every kid gets the $5,000.
Like, every kid, yeah.
Because now student aid and everything is based on the ability to pay, essentially.
So college is a different story. But so sure. The way it would sit, the voucher system would work was this. Is every kid would get X amount of dollars. I just made $5,000. Maybe sure. It's $2,000, $3,000. Sure. I don't know what it would be. But they would get a certain amount of money, and then as parents, you'd say, okay, you'd sit down with Matt and say, where do we want to send our kid? We live here in West Des Moines, but we don't have to send them to West Des Moines. We could send them to Waukee. We could send them to Van Meter. You send them anywhere you want. Runs into a lot of issues that way because now transportation wouldn't be taken care of. So if you want to get to a good school, you're going to have to figure out your own way to do it. So if you live in downtown Des Moines and you don't want your kid to go to a downtown school, that's fine, but you're going to have to figure out how to get them out here. That is a huge hardship on parents because now that busing transportation isn't a thing anymore. Now think about it. All the ones that have means to get their kids out here to West Des Moines or to get their kids somewhere they want to go, now that school's hurting because they just lost 10 kids. You know, they just lost 10 kids, three to homeschool, and they lost, and oh my God, yeah. I could, as Scott Palmer, if I could convince 20 parents to give me their $5,000, I could just start school myself and be like, I'm homeschooling all these kids. And those people could give me all of that $5,000, and I could sit there and make however much money I wanted to make as a school, as me as a person. And I could do it from my house if I wanted to. That's where this voucher thing is going. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just going to hurt a lot of schools that are already holding on, barely holding on by a thread money-wise. We're already getting no money from the government the way it is, and now you're talking about kids having choices, and you won't know your numbers because they might go over here and they might go over here. And if you're doing a chart of good and bad, I see a lot of bad. I see some good. You know, I do think it's good competition. Maybe it'll help rise scores, you know, sure. And make people try harder. Mm-hmm. So I just don't see much. I don't see much in the good column. I don't see much in the how this can be helpful for kids. I just don't see it.
I hear you.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, all right. So as we kind of wind down here a little bit, we'll get on to some lighter topics.
Oh.
We'll lighten things up a little bit. If you had to explain your philosophy of teaching in 1 minute, you got stuck in an elevator for 1 minute, or it's a really long elevator ride, and it's a minute long. Maybe there's 50 floors in this building. I don't know. You're talking to somebody for 1 minute, and you want to tell them, what do you think about teaching? How do you teach?
How I personally?
Yeah.
I'm very much a lead a horse to water, can't make him drink. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much a, hey, I'm going to do all these really fun, cool, amazing things, and I'm going to show you all this so fun stuff. I'm going to make it funny, and I'm going to crack jokes, and I'm going to do activities. But eventually, it's got to come down to you making some choices, mm-hmm. and you've got to hopefully make the right choices. So my goal, whenever I teach, and I hope you noticed that I haven't said math one time, because you know I think this is teaching in general, is you got to get kids in the right spot to make good choices, and then help them through. And you know, I don't know, that's my philosophy, is to make it really fun and exciting and super cool, but then to have them take that next leap into mm-hmm. buying in and to grab stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do. It's hard to do.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Or do you idolize Robin Williams from the Dead Poets Society?
Oh, yeah, he's kind of fun. I've seen that movie several times. But, I mean, think about those kids having a passion and starting the thing, and it's fun that way, man. Mm-hmm. It really is, because, I don't know, I get a lot of, in the Apex program too, especially, and I'm going to use my hands, I apologize for the podcast, but I've got one hand above the other. A lot of the times it's like the teachers are up here and students are here. And I'm talking down at you, man. You need to do what I say, and you need to sit in these rows. Have you been to those elementary schools nowadays, man? Like teachers.
I haven't actually.
Teachers freak. I remember there was a group of them walking into the high school. There's third, fourth graders, whatever they are, and they're walking in just single file line. Nobody's saying a word. And I was like, hey guys, what are you doing in the high school? You know, how's everything going? And one of the teachers was like, shh, they're not supposed to talk when they're in line. And I was like, ooh, okay, my fault. Like, wow. Right? It's yeah. crazy in that way where. I think that's part of talking about the getting beat down and beat down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that happens. But to get them out and to get them excited and not, instead of having me up here talking down at them, like, hey, man, can you help me figure this out? You don't know how often I say that in class. I'm like, hey, I don't know how to embed a Google Cal into this website. I don't know how to embed this thing. Does anybody know? And everybody's like, no. I was like, well, here, come here. Why don't you come help me try to figure out how we embed this in this website, in mm-hmm. this thing? And then, I don't know, it kind of changed the whole paradigm of like down, down, down. You sit in the seat where I told mm-hmm. you, how I told you. And it's like, mm-hmm. what do you want to do? Do you really want to learn this stuff? Because if you don't, we'll find something mm-hmm. else for you. You know, if you don't want to learn the math, mm-hmm. it's not going to hurt my feelings, but X, Y, and Z is going to happen over here, but we can find you something. So,
And I mean, just paying attention to the lecture doesn't necessarily create learn. I mean, a person has to learn. Like, you're a facilitator, right? Oh, I think a lot of people think that, and we've kind of pushed that image too by the, like you said, the teacher up here lecturing down to the kids as if those words are going to just permeate their brains.
And it's the, I'm the keeper of all knowledge.
Right.
I'm the keeper of all knowledge. Right. All of the knowledge must pass through my pearly gates. Welcome to, and that's not, in my world, that's not a thing anymore. Yeah. There's a lot of times where I'll write so fast. I have a mimeopad and I'm doing other things and I'll do an example and I'm talking with them. And then all of a sudden I'll go into the next one. Somebody's like, hey, can you go back? I'm like, nope, you'll have to figure it out. Meaning like, you should be able to figure it out. You don't need to just write down what I wrote down. That doesn't do you any, it doesn't do you any good, or just copy what I wrote down. Right. You don't learn anything that way. You need to try it here. So yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree that the keeper of knowledge is the old school mentality. And think about college professors, man. College professors are really that way because they've been in academia their whole lives. And I think there's still a big disconnect that way. There's a big, to go back to the silos, there's a big disconnect between what I think the real world looks like and what it actually looks like. I mean, you and I both know that we're not, students are expected to go bell to bell to bell to bell productive. You walk in, there's a bell ringer, then there's this assignment, then you have group work, then you go to this, and then you have a board, and then you do this. Mm-hmm. And the bell rings, then you go to the bathroom, then you come here, and you do this. Is that how your office operates? Are you productive every hour of every day?
No.
Right?
No.
And no office is, because that's not, yeah, but... The high school thinks it's that way. Mm-hmm. The college thinks it's that way. So that's what we do, man. Mm-hmm. Bell to bell. Here's, sit down, be quiet. Okay, now take out your notes. Right. Now do this bell ringer. Right. Now get with a partner. Now proofread this thing. Now, it's not how it goes. That's not how it goes.
And like you said, like when kids find something, or even adults, anybody finds something they're passionate in, they just naturally dig in and learn about it themselves. Like we humans are natural learners. And now all of a sudden we've, like learning in quotes is this formal. Yeah. And yes, I understand, like, if you're going to educate a lot of people, you need a classroom, you need a facilitator, a teacher, and there has to be some formalities to it, but kids don't even understand, they don't even understand that learning is also them walking in the backyard, exploring, finding a bug on a tree, picking it up, taking a leg off of it, like, they're learning.
Yeah, yeah.
That's school, too.
And I really think you hit it on the head, and I gave a whole talk about this concept that I gave it in a, I was a part of the Learning Differences Conference in Athens when I was there. And my whole talk was just about how learning is forgotten almost anymore. Like, learning is a side note. Everybody's focused on grades. Everybody's focused on homework. Everybody's focused on these standards. And as you said, just the going out and, like, looking at the sun and being like, why does it do this thing where it, that's gone. And you really hit it on the head when you said, like, humans, we are genetically programmed to figure stuff out. That's how we're wired that way. Like, if I give a kid a puzzle, whether they're in K or 12 or 50 years old, we're ingrained. You're like, wait, why does that fit in there? And why? Every person from kindergarten all the way through would attack that puzzle and try to figure it out because that's just in our genetic code. And I think, as you said, I think that gets lost. That idea that we are learners. By nature, we're learners. So we lose that. We lose some of that passion. We lose some of that drive. We lose the example you said of going out and just looking at a bug and be like, I don't even know what kind of bug this is. Let me take a picture of it. Let me put it on Google. Mm-hmm. We lose that.
Yeah.
The concept of learning is gone. And I gave a whole, like, 20-minute keynote speech about just nobody focuses on learning anymore, man. It's all about grades and homework and da-da-da and percentages and colleges. And no, the learning is gone.
Yeah.
In a way.
Like you said, it's time to wake up.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I had a girl. She wrote me a very nice email. Begging, a very graceful begging, because she, in the email started out, I know at the beginning you said, wake up, and when you gave me this F, I'm now woke up, can I please do that, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I to emphasize the point, I do say it all the time, I was like, wake up, man, wake up and do something, wake up, just sitting here isn't going to get you by anymore, just, so, I don't know, we'll see where it goes, Iowa in the future, and kind of, as I said, watch Iowa and see what happens with this whole education bill, because that's most likely what they're going to try to do in the big government. This is kind of a test trial run for them. So watch what happens and see if that, because that's most likely what Betsy DeVos and Trump and that whole administration is going to try to do as well.
We'll keep our eyes on that.
Yeah.
So this has been amazingly entertaining.
Yeah, this is really
insightful.
Good.
I learned a lot.
I had a lot of fun. This is good. I get jacked up. I get jacked up about this stuff, man, because I think it's super important.
If there's one regret I have about this podcast, I wish I could have gotten you to open up a little bit more and explain more of your views. Everything else was great.
Next time we'll have some booze beforehand. We'll really open up. Yeah, we'll have
all
a
right.
few beers and we'll talk.
Well, awesome, man. Thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it, Scott.
Have a great evening.
Absolutely, you too.